ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु अनित्यं भागवत सेवया भवत्युत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। हरे कृष्ण। So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, Verse 6, I believe. I hope. So we have this here? Yeah. So before we start chanting, Yastvang Krishne Gate Durang. So before we start chanting, just a second. Sahagandiva Dhanava. Now this third line is difficult. Shocho Asi Ashochan Rahasi. So Shocho Syashochan. It's because in Sanskrit it has formal rules for when we say don't you want to go, we say don't you want to go? So Shocho Asi Ashochan becomes Shocho Sashochan Rahasi. Just a hint. Praharan Vadhang Arhasi. So Yastvang Krishne Gate Durang Sahagandhi Vadhanava. Now, if you can't say shocho syashochan varahasi, you can say shocho asi ashochan. Sometimes it makes it easier. Shocho syashochan varahasi. Praharan vadhamarhasi. Yastvang Krishne gate durang. Sahagandiva dhanava. Shochyasya shochan rahasi. Praharanava dhamma rahasi. Yasvam krishne gate duram. Sahagandiva dhanava. Shocho syashochan rahasi. Praharanava dhamma rahasi. Yastvang krishne gate duram.
Thank you.
someone from... Sagandivadandana Chochochasochanahasi Praharanvadhamarhasi Yah, on account of Dvam, you rogue, Krishne, Lord Krishna, Gate, having gone away, Duram, out of sight, Saha, along with Gandiva, the bow named Gandiva, Dhanvana, the carrier, Arjuna. Shocha, culprit. Asi, you are considered. Ashochan, innocent. Rahasi, in a secluded place. Praharan, beating. Vadham, to be killed. Arhasi, deserve. You rogue. Do you dare beat an innocent cow because Lord Krishna and Arjuna, the carrier of the Gandiva bow, are out of sight? Since you are beating the innocent in a secluded place, you are considered a culprit and therefore deserve to be killed. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. In a civilization where God is conspicuously banished, and there is no devotee warrior like Arjuna, the associates of the age of Kali take advantage of this lawless kingdom and arrange to kill innocent animals like the cow in secluded slaughterhouses. Such murderers of animals stand to be condemned to death by the order of a pious king like Maharaj Parikshit. For a pious king, the culprit who kills an animal in a secluded place is punishable by the death penalty, exactly like a murderer who kills an innocent child in a secluded place. So this verse is the continuation of the previous verse. Grammatically, it's a continuation. The previous verse started, Kastvam. So Kastvam means... Who are you? It's a question. So who are you who is doing all these things? It's almost like who are you to do all, who are you to do all these things? And then the continuation is Yahtvam. Yahtvam means it's the relative pronoun, meaning the same thing. You who are with Krishna gate durang. Durang means far. So Krishna is far away, and along with Arjuna, saha Arjuna or saha Gandiva, the one who carries the Gandiva bow, and Maharaj Parikshit calls him Shocho, that you're a wicked man. Why are you a wicked man? Because in rahasi, in secret. Ashochan, this innocent, in a secluded rahasi, in a secluded place, Ashochan Praharan, you're beating this Ashochan, this innocent person. So, Vadham Arhasi. Arhasi means you should, verb is at the end in the Indic languages. And arhasi means you ought, vadham. Vadham arhasi, you ought to be killed. So, 2 points. I'm going to give a 4-part lecture. Hopefully timed reasonably well. First point that really has to be emphasized is this hidden killing. Excuse me. Hidden killing. Prabhupada makes the point. He makes it analogous to slaughterhouses. So we have experience living in this culture, in the American culture. Now, a lot of people don't realize, they don't actually know that Americans are responsible for the greatest contamination in the world. We drive down our suburban streets and we think it's clean. Looks clean, it looks nice. If you go to just our neighboring country, if you go to Mexico, you often see some plastic bags in the streets. And if you go to India, same thing, some dirt here and there, something that we find unacceptable for our suburban areas. So it's very clean here, and people talk about recycling, and I was talking about the environment the other day. Oh, and I'm from Oregon. In Oregon, we're very conscious about these kind of things. And so Americans are proud of their position. But what people don't know is that in this modern culture, In the American culture and Australian, European culture, we hide things. The Americans export all their waste to Asia. We have tremendous waste. We waste more than... We're 5% of the world's population, and we consume something like 15 to 25% more, somewhere between 3 and 5 times what we should, according to our population. So in other words, if you give me a plate of prasadam, there's 20 people in the room. 20 people in the room, but I take a quarter of it. So Americans are greedy people and tremendous waste. So we hide. Rahasi, the word is. So in secret. We do things in secret. We don't have butcher shops anymore. Used to be butcher shops. You go in the marketplace and there's some animal hanging there and somebody's chopping away. There's probably still some in New York and other places. But in general, it's hidden away, organized, and 2 billion animals a year. Mostly chickens, but 500,000 cows. So these things are hidden away, and Prabhupada makes this point that this Kali is doing this in a secluded place. He's beating the cow in a secluded place, just like the modern people are doing this in slaughterhouses. So another point I wanted to make is it happens later in the chapter. I'm just going to see if I can hopefully read this really quickly. Oh, yes. So later in the chapter, verse 19, this gives us a sense for what's going on in this chapter. We're right in the beginning. We're coming. Parikshit Maharaj is coming on Dharma, the bull, being attacked by Kali. But then there's this interaction. The bull is very humble. Bull is Dharma. He's just this wonderful devotee. So the bull says, Parikshit is all upset. He wants to... you hear, Vadham arhasi. Very strong language. You deserve to be killed. You can imagine, Parikshit. Dharma, the bull, says, some philosophers declare that oneself is responsible for his personal happiness and distress. So he's being very philosophical about this being beaten. He says, you know, maybe it's my fault. Some say that, you know, it's happiness and stress are because of me. We hear that. You're suffering. You have something, some bad experience. You know, it's, don't point your finger at others. It's because of you. Then others say that the daiva, that the, it's daivic, the devas, it's beyond our, it's the, this is what happens. This is our fate. Then others say that karma, well, it's your karma. And then finally it's nature. Those who don't see to the devas, they see nature. So dharma is very devotional, very humble, very philosophical. So that's his duty as a devotee. That's his nature as a devotee. But Parikshit doesn't have that luxury. Even though Parikshit is also a great devotee, there's no question. Parikshit is an incredible devotee. But he's a kshatriya and he has to kill. I mean, that sounds violent, but it's not actually. It's like, it's just as violent as taking the weeds out of the, somebody takes weeds out from the lawn because the weeds are choking the grass, or it's establishing justice and righteousness, righteous behavior within society. It's, and that's dharma. Dharma is righteous behavior. It's responsibility. It's, dharma is the way responsible people behave. They have dharmic principles and they behave according to those principles. So without dharma, everything is irresponsible. People become degraded, irresponsible, and even further into madness. So a strong person, a strong administrator, and ideally a strong devotee administrator is necessary to protect dharma. In this case, Parikshit is protecting the bull dharma. And if necessary, to use very strong action. Second part of the class is sadhu sangha. Vaisheshika yesterday gave a wonderful class, and then afterwards he asked, you know, what are our experiences and what kind of what thing enlivened us. So I thought immediately sadhu sangha. So there's a verse that most of you know, adau shuddha sadhu sangha. Adau shuddha tata sadhu sangata bhajana kriya tato narta vritti syat. So starting with adau shuddha, beginning with little faith. So little, we have some faith, some conviction. Oh, this seems good. Then we associate with devotees, sadhu sangha. And then beyond that, bhajana kriya, which Prabhupada translates alternately as bhajana kriya means engaging in devotional service. Kriya means to do something. And it's also translated as initiation. So we become initiated, which implies a commitment to do devotional service, act, and then anartha nivritti. So then gradually by doing something, we become free from anarthas, or the unwanted things. So it's really by doing that we get free. But the basis, the thing that reinforces our faith is sadhu sangha. So sadhu sangha is so important. And to appreciate sadhu sangha, maybe it may not be possible to appreciate all devotees, but it's not just that we have our guru and or we have Prabhupada. We have our friends, the sadhus. And if we can see the qualities in those sadhus, those friends of ours, see these wonderful devotee qualities and have genuine appreciation, then that really helps us in Krishna consciousness. I'll just say from personal experience, when I joined the Krishna consciousness movement, there were just some wonderful, wonderful people that I thought were incredible. And sure enough, it turned out that they were incredible. It wasn't just my imagination. Shyam Sundar, who made friends with George Harrison, Malati, who many of you know, is just this incredible person beyond description. She had just become a devotee. She was a devotee for, I don't know, 2 weeks or a month, and she started prasadam distribution. I mean, who of you, after 1 month, a devotee? And she met Prabhupada. She met Prabhupada. 2 weeks later, she's a devotee. 2 weeks after that, she's doing prasadam, organizing prasadam distribution for, like, every single day, cooking and distributing malati. I can't go into each one. Mukunda, who I worship from the first day, that's Mukunda Maharaj. Excuse me, I'm going to be a little informal here. Mukunda, Janaki, Harsharani, Jivananda, Jayananda. So all these incredible people, some of whom went on to take leadership roles and establish, like, the London Temple, Jayananda was became, of course, the founder of Rathyatra, and incredible devotees that I had the fortune. And then 1969, the following year, again, a whole new wave of leaders. They were just new devotees, brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, and Tamal Krishna, Vishnu John, Sudama, Shilavati, who became the pujari of the universe, Srimati, Kaushalya, who helped Prabhupada establish the India movement. Even the devotees who were just serving in the temple, Yudhishthir, who was here for decades. I loved Yudhishthir. And Kunji Bihari, who was a little wild. And so all these wonderful, wonderful devotees, I personally had good fortune. But I'm sure all of you, I don't know many of you, but I'm positive, 100% sure, that if I had a chance to become friends with you, I would have that kind of appreciation. Now, there's two suggestions I have. In the East, I first noticed this in Iran. Prabhupada asked me to go to Iran to help a Atreya Rishi. Then I noticed that there's this form of introduction that they use in Iran. Sometimes you see it done in this country, but not too often. Iran and India, they use this form of greeting. In this country, usually it's, this is my friend George. George meets Sally. Sally, if you get that, you know. Oh, this is George. What's your name again? Sally, yeah. So in the East, greetings are a lot more personal, I think. So what's your name, Prabhu? Devavrata. So, Devavrata, your name? Brad. So, Brad, I want you to meet Devavrata. He's really a wonderful devotee. What's your service? Book distribution. Devavrata goes on book distribution, and he's incredible. Book distribution is this core activity of our whole movement, and he distributes these books. And it's not like, you know, we say book distribution, it's such an easy thing to do. It's really hard. You have to face rejection and everything. And I'm telling you, this guy's an incredible guy, you know. And so I want you to meet this person, you know. So when you introduce somebody, you find out, or you know already, he's your friend. David Ruta's my friend, so I know his good qualities. I don't tell you that he snores at night and keeps me up, but that's the charm, because he's like a moon, you know, and there's some imperfections. Of course I know him because he's my friend. I know maybe a little imperfection, but I know his beautiful qualities, and I can then introduce like that. I'm trying to make it a little funny, but I was amazed when I encountered that, you know, and I love that custom, because then it forces you to see all the good qualities in your friends and your God brothers and God sisters, and you can introduce them. And this is a wonderful, wonderful preaching tool. So when somebody comes in the door, you can introduce them to the wonderful people in this movement. This is for preaching. This is for expanding. This is my phase of my life, this is my goal, is to try to bring more people into our fold, into the Vaishnava community. And I feel we have wonderful, wonderful temples. People are very generous and give donations. We have this festival that we raised, our goal, I guess, was raised $120,000. So it's not that I don't like money. I love money, but I mean, to use for Krishna. But I really favor the idea of more devotees. And along with that comes more enthusiasm. When we see all these people, and not only that, but when we see them rushing in the door, I've experienced, as a temple president, I've seen going through tough times, austere times. Nobody likes to see, oh my God, nobody's coming in the door, nobody's attending, nobody's, you know, Mangalarti is two people, Harinam Sankirtan is one old man. Ooh. People want to see young people out there, you know, chanting. They don't care about some old... Yeah? You've seen, huh? I've seen the pictures in Florida, like three old men go out, you know, and... So this is my passion. I'm enthusiastic for new. So this is a hint. I'm giving a couple of hints. So one is, this is a good device to use to learn how to give these introductions and bring people in and expose them. This is our greatest asset, this wonderful devotee association. It's not just you come and you say, oh, these are deities, this is a wonderful thing, this is a great philosophy. Nobody understands the philosophy. I don't understand the philosophy. Do you understand the philosophy? This is all, what is this, you know? So prasadam, I understand prasadam. And I understand you. You are wonderful. All of you are just incredible people. I met some new people this time, I got reconnected with devotees that I knew of and I had met, you know, in passing. But Bardraj, I didn't really know Bardraj, and we just connected. And who else? Bhargava. I mean, I knew all these devotees for like 45 years, but so I got connected, and that was so cool, you know, to really bond with devotees. So this is a tremendous asset. And you know what I think, and I'm not the only one. Other devotees have said the same thing. we don't get money for serving Krishna, and we're supposed to get like reciprocation from Krishna, but that's very lofty. You know what I think? The money, the currency that we get paid in is our relationships with each other. That, for me, that's the money. That gives me a lot. I went to Rath Yatra 1 year, long time ago. So I got there, I got out of the car, Jayananda grabs a hold of me. Jayananda, come on, we have to go and do this service. So we had to move these big, huge 50-gallon cans of halava and chutney, because one big walk-in refrigerator had broken, and move it to another one. So Jayananda didn't have time to grab five people or something. He just said, oh, there's Jayananda. So he grabs me, come on, let's go. So this, I mean, just that one thing, just doing that, it was hard work, you know. I've done work like that and been paid a good amount, but I think just that sweet exchange with Jayananda, it probably was enough payment for a couple of years' work for me. So, yeah, devotee exchange is a currency. The other hint I want to give is the other sort of technique is how to play as a team. Now, you know, in basketball, let's talk about basketball, but it's all sports. There's teamwork. A team doesn't win with one star. Yeah, there's a big star like Michael Jordan or whoever. I don't know all the players, but so the team doesn't win from that one star. So it's not that you can't just bring somebody in here and Radhanath Swami or Indradyumna Swami or I don't know, Loknath Swami. You bring them in here and okay, your work is finished. You've sat somebody down here and they see the sweet chanting of Loknath Swami, or they hear the sweet voice of Radhanath Swami, and now your duty is finished. No, there's a team that goes on. And what we learned in Iran, Treya Rishi's idea that I thought was brilliant, was that you try to understand who that person is that you're speaking to. And you get from, oh, you're an engineer. Oh, and you can see, well, this is a mature person. He's an engineer. Well, I know a devotee, actually, who was an engineer. So you introduce that person to the devotee. You try to find like minds. You try to introduce somebody into the sadhu sangha in a way that they get entrapped. That they get entrapped is a nasty word, but in a way that they get enchanted with the association according to their own interests, according to their own level. If it's somebody who's 50 years old, they may like talking to a 25-year-old person, but they may identify more speaking with somebody their age. Or if it's a man, they may be okay speaking with a woman, but really they may be... Anyway, so it depends on the individual. You have to make your own judgment. Prabhupada encouraged the dami buddhi yogang tung, that you have to depend a little bit on Krishna's direction. So these are my two tips to learn how to give these kind of introductions and to learn how to be part of a team when preaching, because this is really our goal. Yes, that's a goal, $120,000. We want those kinds of goals. But we want 120,000 people in Los Angeles also. Whoa. Well, when Prabhupada first, I was here when we established this temple. It was 1970. So it's coming up, how many years is that? 50 years, right? When we were here. So it seems, doesn't seem like so long. It's like a half century. Oh my God, I'm really old. Phew. So Prabhupada was, he was excited with the idea that here's this suburban area. So he told us, he said, you know, convert all these people here. He wanted that kind of thing. He wanted to see average, I don't want to say average, but he wanted to see the people of this country, the people of this community, the people of this city taking up Krishna consciousness. So that's a goal, definitely. Now, I'm just going to pause for a commercial break here. I have this this book that I've written, and I've written a few books, but this book especially is the last book I've written, and the purpose of this book is to bring people in the door. This is what I consider to be my main recruitment tool, and I want to offer it to you also. If it's of any use to you, that's up to you. The title of the book is Modern Culture, a Dangerous Experiment. I just have notes because I don't want to speak too much about it. It represents the essence of this project that I'm doing. I'm calling Save Earth Now. My friend Rupa Vilas said you have to call it Save Earth Now. It's a reference to, it's the environmental concept, but Save Earth Now is a reference to the first article that was published in the New York Times about Prabhupada and chanting in New York back in 1966. So it sort of has a sentimental, hidden meaning. So this project shows, and the book also shows, that core elements of Vaishnava culture have proven solutions to environmental disasters. So what does that mean? That means that every devotee, every Vaishnava, not just Gaudiya Vaishnava, every Vaishnava is working to save the environment far more than every American. So you, each one of you, is an environmentalist. More than the top environmentalists in this country. You are an environmentalist. Not just because, you know, we have a few farms. You are environmentalist. Why are you an environmentalist? There are a number of reasons why you're an environmentalist. You can, you know, read this book or we can talk. But one reason is that you are trying to see the soul in all things. You understand the harm in killing 2 billion animals. You understand the harm of cutting down trees indiscriminately because they're souls. You have respect. All Vaishnavas have respect for nature. You know that the ocean, there's a demigod, there's a deva in the ocean. You have no right to dump in the ocean. You know when there's an alternate energy proposed, oh, we'll use the wind. What right do you have to use that bayou? Do you have bayou's permission? Oh, we'll use the sun. Do you have Surya's permission? Are you giving payment to Surya for your exploitation of his energy? So as Vaishnavas, you know all this. So you are the environmentalists. They're not environmentalists. They just want to figure out how to increase their sense gratification. You are trying to curb your sense gratification. Somebody is doing a better job, granted. Somebody is not able to do it very well, but at least you have the idea. I have to try to curb my sense gratification. I have this idea. Who in America has this idea, curb my sense gratification? I have to get the most toys before I die, is what in America they want to do. So you, each one of you is the environmentalist. So this is the point of my book. Thank you. Sometimes people get put off by my fiery rhetoric. So why? The one thing I didn't mention here, I think, is that if you send me an email, I'm going to pass these. Could somebody do this? Could you pass these out to everyone? So there's a website. You can take a look at the website. So this book, I have to publish through Amazon, so it's a little expensive, but it's $5 on Amazon. If you're a preacher and you can sort of really say that you can use this book to really good advantage. Don't just idly say this. I'll send it to you for free. But what I'd rather send you is like a soft copy. Soft copies are free. PDF or Kindle format, I will happily send you for free. But I suppose I should say limited. I'll send these hard copy in limited distribution if we can make some relationship, friendship. If you're a friend of Raghunath's, then I'll send it to you for free. Okay, that's the commercial break. Went over time. What's the last one? That's 1, 2, 3. Oh, the final portion. So the final portion is talk about the old days. That's what they're paying me to be here for. No, they're not. Not really. The payment was Suvas's association. That was my payment. So, okay, the first story I'll tell is that every Friday, Saturday, there was a rule. Everyone had to go on Harinam Sankirtan. We went up to Hollywood Boulevard. So this is when we first got this temple in 1970. So we were hard at work. A few of us who were good at doing hard work, we were hard at work doing preparing the temple to move in. So Prabhupada's quarters, there was no bathroom in Prabhupada's quarters. So Tulsi and I had to install a bathroom up there in Prabhupada's quarters. And over here, we had a brahmachari ashram up where the gift shop is. And we had to install a shower for the brahmacharis. And we just had to make a lot of modifications just so we could move. We had the temple in La Cienega, and we had to move over here, consolidate everyone. So the first one, it was very practical for us to get Srila Prabhupada moved here because we were renting an expensive house for him in pseudo Beverly Hills below Wilshire. So above Wilshire, I think that's what they used to say, that above Wilshire is the real Beverly Hills and below Wilshire there's an area called Beverly Hills. It's not really. So it was a nice house for $600, which is a lot of money. So we wanted to get Prabhupada in. We fixed his apartment. We were working hard. Then, you know, we were a little sloppy, you know, just sort of leaving things around. So we had left some prasadam plates, maybe half eaten or something, maybe on the windowsill or someplace. We just had, there were a couple of plates of prasadam. So Prabhupada took a tour, and Prabhupada would do this sometimes. Sometimes he was on the spot, he would say something. Like in Mayapur, he would say, he would stop and he would point at the light that was still on. In his morning, he would take a morning walk, the sun would come up and it would be light, and then he would say, "Why is this light still on?" Or "Why is the floor?" They would wash the floor and they would squeegee it, and he would say, "Why is the floor still wet?" So immediately he would. But then at other times, he would notice something, he would note it, and then he would wait for an appropriate time. Excuse me, maybe even think about it, how he's going to deal with this and who he's going to approach to, so that they can take responsibility for this. So this is what happened. He took a little tour to see what we were doing, what improvements we were making. And then in the evening, this was in late morning, he came around. Then in the evening, we were all getting ready to go on Harinam on Hollywood Boulevard. And I get the call, "Prabhupada wants to see you." So I went into Prabhupada's quarters up here, and he started talking to me about Vedic culture and the natural living. And he brought up the prasadam. He said that this was disrespect to prasadam. But then he related it to the entire Vaishnav culture. Somehow or other, he connected this to the way of natural living, that prasadam, taking prasadam and treating prasadam respectfully, he was relating that to the sweet, natural life in the principally rural, agrarian Vaishnav society or culture. And the part of the story, and this went on for, unfortunately, it's so long ago I can't remember the whole conversation, only just little pieces. But one part that really stuck in my mind was that he said, in the villages, now keep in mind that we are urban people for the most part. We live in an urban culture. What is it they say, like 90% of people or live in cities, something like 90-95%. But just 100 years ago, or in this country, it's about 200-250 years ago, 90-95% of the people lived in the country, in rural areas. So the culture was different. The entire way of thinking. Can you imagine, you know, everybody is going to work, clogging up the streets, running here and there, and having no time for anything. But in the rural culture, there's a planting cycle, and there's time for people to get to know each other and to talk and maybe be a little philosophical about life and have genuine exchanges. So I'm just trying to give a taste for the complete difference in this is a mundane idea. But what Prabhupada said, one thing that Prabhupada said that really stuck with me all this time is that the village people used to go to the Brahmin's house and they used to be entertained by the local Brahmin. So I've always thought about that, and I've had a couple of two or three really wonderful experiences like that, where a devotee or somebody who really knew Krishna Katha or Ramayana or Mahabharata or something like that was very entertaining. So this is another, I think another hint, another technique that devotees can learn. It's not just by philosophy. As I mentioned, the sadhu sangha, the people, the devotees, are important to attract someone into our group. But it's entertainment. The soul is an enjoyer. It's not that we want to renounce enjoyment. We, as devotees, we want to somehow or other distance ourselves or cut off altogether material enjoyment. But we want to embrace spiritual enjoyment. So how is that done? One of the principal ways, yes, by chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And there are millions of names. Vibha, we were singing last night. I went to Bhardwaj's house, and we sang the song Vibhavari Shesha Loka Provesha. If you've been to Vrindavan, you know every morning, Bolo Hari Hari Mukunda Murari Ramakrishna Yagriva Nishinga Vamana Shri Madhusudan. So these are all names for Krishna, but almost every single one is associated with a lila. Nrsimha, the lila of Nrsimhadev, and Rasa Parayana, so beautiful name invoking the Rasa lila. So all these wonderful lilas. So we can share lilas. It doesn't have to be on some lofty level, but there's a lila that goes on with Krishna and Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. So this is a very practical lila. So when Prabhupada said that, you know, I've just been thinking about it over the years. And I'll give one example, actually, that I just experienced a few days ago. We went to this program. A few of us squeezed into this car. Somehow I thought I was 35, and we allowed too many devotees into the car, and so I was squeezed. It was really painful. We finally got there, and so I said, okay, before we got there, I said, okay, I'm going to warn you now. I'm getting irritated, you know, just in case I say something inappropriate. So it was so uncomfortable. So we got there finally, and it was a nice program, nice chanting, nice people, and nice devotees. And then Dinabandhu Prabhu started to speak. They said, you know, one of the reasons we brought Dinabandhu along was so that he could give a little talk. And even though Dinabandhu is an old, old friend of mine from 1969, and he's famous for these katas, he's famous Brijvasi, and takes people on tours and things like that. But I have to. There's some few things that I've missed in my life, and probably wasted most of my life. I haven't heard these katas. So Dinabandhu starts to speak about Vrindavan, and he took us through. It was almost like a guided meditation. He took us through Vrindavan, and we went to different places. If you close your eyes and you listen to him, then he's talking about this path, and we go down the path, and there's trees, these kind of trees here, and those kind of trees there, and there's a temple here. And
So it was this very sweet.
You know, he didn't give a Bhagavad Gita class. In my mind, that wouldn't have been appropriate in that setting anyway. So somebody else could have perhaps done it in a sweet way in that setting. But he gave this. So in my way of thinking, this was what Prabhupada was telling me 50 years ago in his quarters, that you go to the Brahmin's house, or in this case, the Brahmin came to her house, and there's this entertainment. So we're meant to enjoy, but we're meant to enjoy Krishna. So we all had a great time. I don't think anyone turned on their TV that night. So that's the idea. Do we want to replace the mundane enjoyment with the Krishna enjoyment? And it doesn't come just in one form. It doesn't mean that we have to force ourselves to, you know, I'm going to get all my enjoyment out of chanting Hare Krishna. We're not that advanced. Only maybe one or two of you are, but I'm not, and the rest of us are not. So, the Leelas provide, and Rath Yatra was a Leela celebration. You know that we celebrate the Krishna's Leela, reuniting with the gopis. And how am I doing for time? Suvas is tapping his watch. Does that mean I'm running? Okay. So, okay. So I just wanted to emphasize this point. I wanted to share that with you because it's another aspect of preaching and how we can get people in the door. Not just, you know, okay, you have to accept Bhagavad Gita, repent or perish, and four regulative principles, and we follow no meat eating, no illicit sex, and and we don't kill people, and I don't know, whatever. And Prabhupada said, he said, don't lead with the four regular principles. So he was giving that advice to, I don't know, in a letter. I was thinking Radhananda Swami, but I don't know, if I've forgotten. Preaching in the colleges. Radhananda, he gave that to Radhananda. Advice about preaching in the colleges. Don't lead with the four regular principles. So we want to lead with enjoyment. How do you enjoy Krishna consciousness? We have the people. You hang out with these people. They're great people. Incredible people. I want you to meet some of them. Wonderful people. And, we're going to have this thing where we're going to have a good time and talk about Leela. Doesn't have to be some high, high Leela. In our case, it was very sweet, very wonderful Leela. But, so that's another advice about preaching. Okay, now I'll tell you, I've told this a number of times before, but hopefully some of you haven't heard it. But I'll tell you about finding this place. We came here. How much time do I have anyway? It's 20 minutes to 9. So another 10 minutes, is that okay? Yeah? Well, fine sounds to me like half-hearted. Is it? That's okay? Okay. So, I used to take cookies from my mother would disapprove, and I would make her, she would disapprove, but then I would make her approve in the proper tone of voice. Oh, yes, please, have one. Anyway, so so the, we were as everyone knows, the previous temple was on La Cienega. Well, Leo Brown was the realtor that found us the La Cienega place. And so Prabhupada suggested we wanted to move. We had the temple. We were renting $400 a month. Prabhupada's apartment was, or house in the pseudo Beverly Hills was $600. So that was a lot. Then we had a Brahmacharini ashram up the street. I don't know how much that was. I don't know. I'm guessing another $200. And then we had an office up the street, apartment. That was another whatever it was. So we had all these property expenditures. We wanted to consolidate. The lease was up. So it was logical. We had some money. We'd been saving. We were making incense, and that was fairly lucrative. And so we went on the search. Prabhupada said, why don't you get that nice American gentleman, who Leo Brown, the man from who found us the La Cienega temple. So we got him. We called him up. He said, call back. He says, well, I have these places I want to show you, these two churches, two Methodist churches. That's what this was. They joined their congregation. They had some fight, you know, like we have disagreements, like the ISKCON people and the Ritviks or whatever it is. And so two groups, and then they made up. They decided, okay, we're going to all join back together again. So the two Methodist group, they decided to get together, and they made a compromise. The Ritvik side said, okay, we'll accept this, and the other side said that. So they joined together. They didn't need both churches, so they were going to sell one. So we came and we looked at both. So it was Garga Muni and Prabhupada and me. And Leo Brown, of course. So we were here first, Garga Muni and me and Prabhupada. We were standing here, and the door right across, I don't know where that door leads now, but that was the minister's office right across here. So Prabhupada, three of us were standing, Prabhupada took his cane and he kind of knocked on the wall. And he said, what construction is this? It's like this typical California construction. Anyway, you probably know. But so the minister thought we were knocking on the door there. So he was in his office. So he opened the door, and we introduced ourselves, and we sat down. And Prabhupada started to explain Krishna consciousness to him. And I thought it was the sweetest, most concise, communicative way, and I wish I could remember what he said, but I just had this impression like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm hearing this. You know, this is the nicest way of presenting Krishna consciousness. He didn't say, you know, well, we obey four regular principles, no meeting, no sect, no gambling, no intoxication, and we... You know, it was just very sweet and nicely directed toward this man of God. He was a minister, a Methodist minister. So that was nice. It established a nice relationship with the man. And as I'll explain later, he really appreciated Prabhupada. And we walked around this place and saw this place. We went to the other church and we saw that one, and we liked this one better. And then we went across the street in one of the apartments across the street to talk more. And so we liked it. And then Prabhupada started to negotiate. And that was another thing, another amazing thing to watch. First watching him preach to this one-on-one kind of, one-on-one exchange with the minister. And then a whole different Prabhupada, the negotiator. So he said, and I wish I could say word for word, but I'm just going to give you little bits and pieces as I can remember it. One of the things he said, but well, we're as poor as church mice. And then he was talking on, and then he said, he gave this this idea, and the way he did it was he just sort of embedded it in his conversation. He said, well, you know, he said, you're servants of God and we're servants of God, and in that sense we could just ask you to give it to us. But we won't do that. He says, but we won't do that, you know. We won't go that far. And so then he said to the minister, so after that, so he'd kind of set the minister up. So then he said, but anyway, so you give your best price. So, but then the minister said, well, he said, it's not up to me. He said, we have a board of trustees. So it's up to them. They're the ones who manage this kind of thing. So you would think that would put an end to the conversation. That, how can you come back to that? I mean, he didn't have access to the trustees. They're off somewhere, you know. So what's the response now? Prabhupada then, and I wish I could remember the exact words, Prabhupada empowered the minister to act on our behalf. He said, will you speak to them? He said to the minister, you speak to the trustees to get them to give us the best deal. He empowered the minister to. So that was another very sweet exchange to see Prabhupada negotiating. So first preaching, then negotiating. And then another couple weeks, 3 weeks, I don't know, went by. And Prabhupada, so then the deal was final. We were definitely going forward, and it was just a matter of we were going to move in a couple weeks' time or something. So Prabhupada said we should have all the devotees come from La Cienega. Every devotee should come here and see where, you know, what we're, you know, see the temple and what we're moving into, and so get a preview. So all the devotees came, and we're walking around. We had access to the place, even though we hadn't moved here quite yet. So all the devotees are walking around, following Prabhupada, and Prabhupada's walking through each room, and everybody sees the place. And then all, over here on this other side, we were walking through, and all of a sudden, through the door right in front of us, the minister comes. I didn't even know he was in the building, but he came in through the door and just met Prabhupada, and devotees are all around Prabhupada, his disciples. And then one of the first things, the minister said hello, and one of the first things he said was he complimented, so your disciples look very nice. He was complimenting Prabhupada by saying that he appreciated his disciples. And Prabhupada immediately, he said, yes, you can also become. So this was like, you're like, good. So but Prabhupada as the preacher, one-on-one preacher. We've all seen tapes of Prabhupada preaching on Vyasasan, but one-on-one preaching and negotiating and his quick wit. Prabhupada was quick on the comeback. It's very hard to say something to Prabhupada and then he would have something. That I saw Prabhupada one time, this crazy hippie in San Francisco, he stood up in the middle of the group, he said, I am God. Prabhupada said, you are dog. I said, no, too far. I can't remember. Okay. Okay, so when do I want to finish? I have two more. I'll just do one more. Okay, this is a quick one. And this is a message of empowerment. For me, anyway. I believe that every devotee is empowered to preach. Okay, I'm going to just tell this quickly. The first time Prabhupada came to Los Angeles, we came from San Francisco. Three of us came down from San Francisco. We were all junior devotees. There were some other devotees, senior devotees. They were supposed to come to Los Angeles, but they were in Maya. So I'm telling it quickly. So a little brutal, but we were just junior devotees. In my mind, I was just a junior devotee, and I wasn't senior like those other devotees who were 5 years older and they joined 7 months earlier. So we came to down to L.A. We got a job and a nice job, enough to maintain the little storefront that we rented. And we thought that all temples were storefronts in those days. So Prabhupada had gone to India because he had had a heart attack in New York. You've read the history, perhaps, that Prabhupada had a heart attack in New York. Then he went to India, and then he recovered, and he got re-energized, and he came back to the U.S. Well, we had written him that we'd open this little center, and so he arrived in San Francisco, and he wanted to come to Los Angeles. The devotees came down from San Francisco, Shamsundar, Mukunda, and Murari, and we all painted. Mukunda rented this room, this apartment. I think it was on Saturn. That's what Alarka told me. So Mukunda says that in his book. So on Saturn, and not too far from our Pico temple. And so we hurriedly painted it. We painted it all white. It was kind of crummy condition. So Prabhupada came, and then I drove him to the temple for my job. I had to buy a little new Volkswagen Beetle, and so I drove Prabhupada to the temple, and I was so nervous. It was drizzling, it was raining, and I forgot to turn on the windshield wipers. And I'm looking out the window, trying to see out the window, and we get to the temple, and I thought, oh my God, I didn't turn on the windshield wipers. I was so nervous driving Prabhupada. So we get to the temple. We just walk in the door, and Prabhupada turns to me and he asks, "So you'll give class?" I said, No, Prabhupada, you'll give class. I think you give class. I mean, I just got over not turning on the windshield wipers, and then Prabhupada asked me this, and then he says, "No, you can give class." I think you should give class. And then they said, "No, you give class." So I remember that clearly. Question, statement, order. So I had no choice. I had to give class. And then in those days, there was no Bhagavad Gita. We had no Bhagavad Gita. I had read all three volumes of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the first canto, so I read that first canto. That was all we really had. There were a few pamphlets, like Easy Journey to Other Pamphlet, Easy Journey to Other Planets, and there. I had been fortunate to work before I came to L.A. as a typist for Hayagriva, and I typed out the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So I had read the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. But that's all. And I'd just been a devotee for 1 year. And so I was still full of sort of speculation and whatever nonsense that we were all full of. And so I remember thinking I could prove the existence of God. So I was going on about something, however I proceeded. And then right in the middle of the class, Prabhupada interrupted and he said a few things. I realized that, oh my God, I've said something that's really 180 degrees out. It's the opposite of our philosophies. So he corrected me, and then he said, go on. And then, so I finished. And later he wrote to another devotee that Dayananda can give a nice class. I have heard, you know. So I thought, oh my God. Whatever you say, I don't know. So this is a message of empowerment. I had been a devotee for 1 year. I hadn't read so much. I wasn't a bhakti shastri. I wasn't anything, you know, didn't know that much. But Prabhupada empowered. He wanted to see that. Obviously, I mean, I think it's fairly obvious that he was testing me. You know, I was supposed to be in charge of this place, and he wanted to see, well, what's this guy going to say, and how is he going to represent the movement? And so it was a little test, yes, but I believe it translates to all of you. Maybe not every single one of you. Maybe one or two of you are too shy. I'm a shy person, but somehow I've learned to be able to speak, and I've learned to be able to interact and preach also, overcoming some shyness and some reticence. But I think that it's our movement. We're a preaching movement. I was shy. The first time I distributed magazines was downtown L.A., and I walked around the block with a magazine holding it like this, thinking that somebody was going to come and grab it out of my hands and give me $5 or something, you know. So, yeah, I'm a shy person, I don't know. And then I learned from other devotees, you know, well, no, you put it in their hand. So I asked Vishal, well, how do you sell so many magazines? He says, oh, I tell them they have nice shoes. So this is something we have to do. It's our movement. We're supposed to do these things, so we have to overcome our reticence as much as we can. I mean, somebody may find it impossible, but really, I mean, a lot of us suffer from these same problems. We may be shy, we're not raised in a culture or in a family or a community that goes out and boldly talks to people in the street. We may be upset by rejection or whatever it is. We may have inhibitions, but let's all learn how to speak to people. And, you know, maybe you can't come up here and, I mean, there's limited number of slots to come and give Bhagavatam class, but in some fashion, you know, give class to two or three other people in the Brahmacharya ashram or in somebody's house or something like that. And everyone, all women, children from childhood, learning how to speak a little about Bhagavad Gita. I love Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita really is the basis of our, but also Srimad Bhagavatam and other topics. And then learn how to entertain, like our wonderful sage, Brijbasi, Dinabandhu. And learn how to make friends with people, glorify other devotees, work as a team. And let's get more of these $120,000 goals, but let's make a goal of 120,000. I want to see 120,000 new devotees in Los Angeles before I die. So, and I might die next week, you know, I'm an old man. Is that it? Is that enough? Have you had enough of me? Now, there's an important question that I've heard from over the years, from time to time. Maybe some of you have heard this from me before, but You know, after the Bhagavatam class is over, or getting over, it's gone on and on, you know, somebody raises their hand in the back and they say, Prabhu, I say, yes, you have a question. You say, what time is prasadam? Yes, I think it's at 9 o'clock, Prabhu. Are you supposed to get the mic? But I can repeat the question. I'm sorry, it seems theoretical, the whole scene of the Kali and Pariksit, or what? You brought up an interesting point. Let's see. Oh, my God, it's after 9. It's after 9. We have to go to... No, actually, I have some really... I'm going to go boom, boom, boom here. Well, first of all, Prabhupada, Balavanta wanted to establish an In God We Trust party. So there's a precedent from Prabhupada that he gave approval. There were some difficulties, but if we study the precedent... then we can understand, we can derive some sort of ideas from that. We know right now Tulsi, of course, is running. I think it's marvelous. Other devotees are, there may be some dogs barking at the caravan, but, oh, I'm sorry, did I say that? that's a reference. The Prabhupada said that the dogs will bark and the caravan passes, but I can be a little rude sometimes. I guess the brief answer to your question is we know that a religious person, as I'm sitting here in the pulpit, I can't say anything political, endorse any political party or anything like that. Religion is not supposed to do that kind of thing. But, you know, Pat Robertson he ran for president in he's this Christian guy in wherever he is, North Carolina or somewhere. And he's a preacher. So he even ran for president one year, or he started to. So, there should be no problem. We have precedent, the In God We Trust party, within our early movement. There are some lessons to be learned from that. Islam, I think we can use, I'm sorry to say, but I think we can use Islam and the Catholic Church as an example. There were the Byzantine Empire and the Persian Empire. When Islam took over the Persian Empire, it was a tremendous feather in their cap. These were just some practically nomadic Arabs. They weren't nomadic, they were in Mecca, but they were relatively primitive people, and they took over one of the two major empires in the world. So this was a tremendous accomplishment, and they had to design laws. They had to figure out how to rule. So this was a process they had to go through. So we're not ready to become president, but we don't have to become ready before we become president. That's as well as we can. But I don't think that should prevent us from becoming president. The devotees, I think, want to over-prepare. But the history of our movement and the history of many movements is to first do and then become qualified to do. So you kind of become qualified on the way to doing. So yeah, I think in answer, direct answer, yes, Raghunath Prabhu, I think you should go ahead and become president and we'll help you along the way. I'm not offended. Believe me, I've been around the block.